A major deal in the drugs industry and why bamboo beats concrete in post-earthquake Nepal. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Fifth time's a charm for Japanese drug maker Takeda. The company reached a whopping $64 billion preliminary deal to buy rare disease drug maker Shire. Dr. Stephen Godwin, a director at Planning Shop International, a pharma research firm, explains Shire's allure.
Not only is it a money-making company, they have a good number of products across several categories of therapeutic area, which are going to mature over the next 5 to 10 years. And it's the whole need of everyone from the chief executive downwards to ensure that a company, whether it's as big as Pfizer or GSK or as relatively smaller like Shire, has a well-stocked pipeline. The challenge is becoming tougher and tougher. One, you have the difficulty of developing drugs that are better than already drugs that are good. Secondly, you have an increasingly high regulatory requirement because safety is absolutely everything. And thirdly, you have what they call the patent cliff, where after you've had the drug in your company for about 20 years, but probably only commercialized it for about 10, the drug faces generic competition.
Stephen Godwin, let's do the numbers. Global stocks are lower as investors monitor first quarter earning results and the impact of higher inflation. The yield on the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury bond is above 3% for the first time in more than 4 years. The BBC's Victoria Craig explains.
Inflation has long been a word on global investors' lips. Central banks monitor it, Wall Street bets on it, and shoppers feel it. With the Fed, one of the biggest buyers of U.S. government debt, in the early stages of phasing out its bond-buying program, the yield on the 10-year Treasury note has moved higher as prices fall, and it's garnered a lot of attention. That's because it's a benchmark rate used to calculate mortgages and corporate borrowing costs. In other words, it impacts a lot of people, from ordinary Americans to companies taking advantage of ultra-low interest rates. Nick Gartside of J.P. Morgan Asset Management says the recent move higher in the 10-year yield signals better expectations for growth and inflation, not just in the U.S., but globally.
Economists are looking at economies around the world and they're seeing good things. They're seeing expectations of growth actually going a lot stronger. And of course, when you've got stronger growth, that pushes bond yields a little higher because central banks can raise rates a little more.
While yields on the 10-year bond are rising on positive forecasts for economic growth, yields on shorter maturity 2-year notes are also nudging up on expectations the Fed will continue to raise rates this year. If those shorter-term yields rise faster than longer-term ones, many economists say it could be a warning sign a recession is on the way.
What typically happens as central banks lift interest rates, they always overdo it. As they overdo it, they cause that next recession. That's quite far out. It typically inverts when you get to the final Fed rate increase. So let's say that's 18 or 24 months out.
For now, Gartside says better global growth and inflation expectations coupled with rising oil prices will likely push the 10-year yield to 3.25% to 3.5%. In London, I'm the BBC's Victoria Craig for Marketplace.
3 years ago today, Nepal was hit by a series of earthquakes, which killed nearly 9,000 people and destroyed more than 800,000 homes. Today, just 15% of those homes have been rebuilt. I went to Nepal's new National Archive to meet its architect. He thinks his ideas could speed up reconstruction.
My name is Nripal Adhikari. I am a designer and founder of Abari, the firm that specializes in natural materials.
Now, we are surrounded by those natural materials here in the National Archive. All around us, Nepal, a spiderweb network of bamboo. Why bamboo?
It's very lightweight. It can compare to bird's bone in density, but in strength, it can compare to steel. It's an amazing material. We call it God's gift. If you build a structure like this, it sways when the earthquake comes, and then it springs back to its shape.
Can you find bamboo everywhere?
We are fortunate enough to have about 54 species of bamboo, like the tropical bamboo from Indonesia to the temperate bamboo that you find in Tibet. We have bamboo very thin to really thick bamboo, which is like an elephant's leg.
Now, we know that nearly 3 years on, the pace of rebuilding has been pretty pathetic. I'm guessing cost is part of the problem.
It is, definitely. You can make a beautiful two-story house using traditional material for $5,000. And the government, they're giving $3,000 to construct homes, but their regulations are so stringent, it would cost at least $10,000 for two-room house. Because they've come up with this message that all the natural building materials are not strong. You have to pour tons of cement to make it strong according to their standard. And they don't have the skill set. You have to bring workers from India to build homes. Nepali people are like resilient. They know how to build their homes. Now they've become totally dependent. They are still living 3 years after the earthquake in metal sheets.
In little sheds.
It's terrible. Like if it's cold, it gets really cold, you know.
And we're not just talking cold. This is the Himalayas.
I mean, it's very extreme. People are getting sick. The problems are enormous.
Nirpal Adhikari. I'm Anu Anand in London with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.